always think of resiliency and adaptability being the primary skill that we are going to have in learning and development. What is out there? How can we be nimble? How can we continue to evolve our skill set and be hungry for change, not be threatened by it?
You're listening to Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. On each episode, we sit down with key industry experts to discover more about what's happening in the world of learning and development, from current trends and insights to the most valuable lessons learned along the way. Join us for a fresh perspective on all things training and the best direction forward.
Welcome to Learning Leader Spotlight, where we interview the learning leaders of today to help the learning leaders of tomorrow. I'm your guest host, Tracy D. Lufkin, and I'm a relationship manager with Training Pros, the sponsor of this podcast. We like to say, when you have more projects than people, let us help you find the best consultant to start your project with confidence. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Haley Harbaugh, Director of Learning at Bloom Healthcare. I first met Haley in person at our local ATD networking event last month, and after hearing her insights on L&D trends, I knew we had to have her on the podcast. She brings a wealth of knowledge about where our industry is headed, and I'm excited to dive into today's conversation. Haley, welcome to the podcast. Let's start by giving our audience a quick overview of what you do at Bloom Healthcare.
Thanks for having me. It was great seeing you there and being here with you today. I am the Director of Learning here at Bloom Healthcare, and I really do a lot of different things. I'm one of those typical L&D people that wear a lot of hats. So I do everything in learning and development, including our provider education, performance evaluation, and talent development. Right now I'm working a lot on revamping our leadership development programming, onboarding, as well as learning technology. So all of the wonderful things that L&D professionals do, that is what I do. I am not clinical though, so I do have some subject matter experts that I partner with pretty frequently to help me with that provider education or that clinical education. But that's my role in a nutshell, and I've been here for a little over a year, so it's been a really fun ride so far.
Wonderful. Well, Haley, your work at Bloom Healthcare is so crucial to an industry where continuous learning directly impacts patient care. So let's take a step back. What first drew you into the world of L&D?
I feel like I'm pretty typical, like most L&D folks are, where I feel like I fell into it, to be honest. I have been working in L&D though now for about 15 years, which is hard to believe. As I started at L&D, I feel like I was always really that person who was the informal trainer for a lot of organizations, whether it be retail, financial services, or now healthcare. I always somehow fell into being that informal trainer. When I started working for one of my other organizations, I realized that I was actually good at creating technical training content as well. So like EMR content, how to evaluate a patient's medical record, basically, and audit that. Help desk materials for people. And so I realized that I was pretty good at that and good at explaining that information to people. And I kept asking my boss, I said, you know, I really want to do learning and development and training and development. And I remember this moment very vividly. I was sitting at a table with him and he said, listen, Haley, if you are serious about learning and development, you need to go back to school. I had already had a bachelor's at that point. And I was like, oh, wow, I have to go back to school? Okay. That's weird. So I started investigating that and decided that, you know what, learning and development was something that I wanted to make a career out of as I started looking at different programs. And so I ended up going back to school for a master's in instructional technologies for adult learning, really fell in love with that, and then ended up moving on and getting a doctor of education from Johns Hopkins. And so definitely leaned all in learning and development, even though I fell into it initially. But you know, what really gave me a lot of passion in this space is seeing those light bulb moments, you know, when you see that learner say, ah, I get it now. That is so rewarding. And I feel like a lot of L&D folks that I talk to have a similar passion for it. And just being able to shift behaviors and thinking and just really leaning into true behavior change and how they want to shape their career and their life. So that's kind of my journey into this. Very forceful, but also very natural. And I'm so happy to be in it.
That's wonderful. That moment when a concept clicks for someone, it's truly one of the most rewarding aspects of L&D.
Love that. Yes.
The field has evolved so much. Haley, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in the last few years?
As I reflect on the last five or so years, I think there was, during the COVID timeframe, I think that was when we first saw that really deep first wave of layoffs in L&D and people having to wear, really being forced to wear those multiple hats. I know in L&D, we typically have to wear multiple hats, but I think it was much more so in that time frame. And so that was a big change for a lot of people who maybe were more specialized in just giving facilitation. Maybe a teammate of theirs was let go, and now they had to do LMS administration as well. I know I saw that during COVID, and that really required people to start to think about their skill set differently. So as an example, you know, I had mentioned that people that I worked with were facilitators, and that was their lifeblood. You know, they love facilitation. However, during COVID, they ended up having to do some LMS administration at that point because maybe the training coordinator role got cut. And so we started to see that they were repurposed in a lot of different ways, not to mention those people who thrived on in-person meetings and events now were having to deliver this virtually. And that really took a lot out of, I think, some of those facilitators. And they had to step back and say, is this what I want to do? And what else could I be doing to emphasize my true skill set? And so we saw things like that happening and people maybe moving out of L&D and into other areas, or maybe some people were leaning into L&D as the environment of learning and development shifted. And then I think just more recently, I think we can all appreciate the fact that AI is here to stay. And now that we are seeing this pendulum swing of more companies, more programming in person, I think we need to find this balance of like, what can we be doing with AI to help facilitate those trainings and utilize it more effectively? You know, I think about this other example with AI in the current state, how EMRs, electronic medical records, were in the beginning, where physicians didn't really quite know how to use it to have that in-person, face-to-face experience with somebody in a patient setting. And so we sat about it more of like driving the conversation versus the physician driving the conversation. I feel like in L&D, we're thinking about AI or emulating AI in that similar space where we aren't quite sure how to use it in that face-to-face conversation, but we know that we need to bring it along. And so really starting to think about how are we incorporating and using AI more intelligently to help with some of those changes that we're seeing in the L&D field right now.
The days of L&D being just about content delivery are long gone.
Yeah, I think that's a really great question and something really important for learning and development, as well as the business overall, to consider in the next 5 years. And so when I think about what does this look like in the next 5 years for L&D, I want to contextualize it a little bit. And so zooming out, when we think about in the next 5 years, I think one big component is that we're going to have our first generation alphas entering the workforce, starting in around 2028, maybe a little bit before that. And of course, after that. But that's really going to be the first time that we have two digital native generations in the workforce. And I think that's a really huge component that we have to think about in urban development. The other really big generational shift is that our last baby boomers are going to be exiting the workforce in about 2031. So when we think about this in the sense of sheer dynamics, shifting how we are thinking about educating our workforces, we have to consider, okay, so now that our baby boomers are kind of on that tail end, a lot of them have already retired or they're in that last phase of their careers, how are we still engaging that population and being very thoughtful about how we are educating those Gen Alphas coming into the workforce and entering the workforce? Because I think a lot of us have started to see this shift in micro-credentials, we don't necessarily have to have a four-year degree. You know, so the Gen Alpha who are coming into the workforce may have a very different sense of what's expected for on-the-job training and how they want to be engaged in learning and development. It may not be a set and get inside the classroom. It may not be a four-hour module on a self-paced course. So we are going to have to really be thinking about this population and engaging them as they're coming into the workforce and almost leaning into this digital native space and having them also help innovate in some of this more technological information age that we are really going to have to be forced into as we start to see more digital natives coming into the workforce. We are going to have to be much more nimble about that and thinking about how we are serving those populations. I think a lot of times people focus on the AI piece of like the next 5 years. And honestly, like, yes, AI is going to be a big component, but that's the cost of entry. Like, that is going to be an expectation for that generation that we are using AI and we are helping them use AI. And they may be teaching us how to use AI. So I think there's a lot there that is going to be rich, rich information for us to be able to understand a little bit more about how to better serve those populations, just understanding sheer generational shifts in the next 5 years.
Wow. I hadn't even heard the term digital natives. And so like, yes, it totally makes sense. And Gen Alpha.
Yes.
Wow. You're right. That's in like literally in the next 5 years. And
we're already very soon.
Some of those needs now, though, with the Gen Zers, right? I've got two of them myself, both of my sons, and being able to engage them in content that is like the TikTok style and right. And but, you
exactly.
know, they have the ability to really focus on content because they binge watch series after
totally.
Series.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's like, what's that happy medium that we can engage them with in learning and development and staying resilient? Now, how are we thinking in L&D about this and saying curious, I think, more than anything. How
yes.
are we staying curious about these next generations in the next few years?
I love that, staying curious.
This episode is brought to you by Training Pros, the award-winning contract staffing agency that works exclusively with learning and development professionals to match the right consultants to client projects. If you're in corporate L&D and have more projects than people, let the industry practitioners at Training Pros provide you with the right L&D consultant to start your project with confidence. Find out how we make finding quality consultants easy by scheduling a consultation at www.trainingpros.com.
As we have this shift from kind of module-based training and, you know, where a lot of us grew up with this methodical approach to training is changing.
Mm-hmm.
So as that's changing and AI becomes more embedded and the generations come up and things change, what skills or roles do you think will be most in demand moving forward?
As AI is continuing to be the main components of most business, I guess, collaborations across different departments and how we are utilizing it, I do foresee that the traditional role of learning and development will start to incorporate more of that AI specificity. So I know we've got some of our machine learning type of roles right now and people who are more dedicated on that side. But I really see that as the technology, the AI technology becomes more sophisticated to be more widely used by a myriad of people, I think there's going to be specialized functions to really use that. So we have our learning experience designers right now or our instructional designers right now. Let's imagine that there's probably going to be a more specialized role who are able to utilize AI in a much more streamlined fashion, a much more embedded fashion into the information that they're creating. So if those instructional designers today are not thinking about what does this look like in 5 years, they should be, because I think that AI is going to continue to be an expectation to be used in learning and development, whether it's script writing, whether it's, you know, instead of spending the day in the studio with talent, you are using an AI avatar that looks like a person to read your scripts out instead of spending that day inside of, you know, the studio with somebody in a green room. So I think that there's that shift into the more focused AI roles that people will have to know how to use that. And then it may also still silo those other folks who want genuinely that face-to-face interaction. And so you may start to see that branching almost of how we're looking at functions within L&D. And I think just generally, when we think about skills and learning and development, this is probably across multiple types of roles too, across different sectors and industries. I always think of resiliency and adaptability being the primary skill that we are going to have in learning and development. So like I was just saying, you know, staying curious. We have to think about what is out there. How can we be nimble? How can we continue to evolve our skill set and be hungry for change, not be threatened by it, because it's going to be inevitable that the next several iterations of roles within L&D are going to be significantly different, likely, than what they've been in the past. It's just the nature of evolution, I think, across the board. But so those are a couple skills that I would imagine should be cropping up more and more.
I would agree. I think AI is clearly reshaping our field. And for L&D professionals, it's not about being replaced. It's about adapting, like you said, embracing change. Those are all key things. And we're experiencing some of that now, maybe just with the way the environment is and the landscape. So speaking of adaptation, mentorship can play a big role in growth. Haley, who has been your most influential professional mentor?
The person that actually told me that I needed to go back to school. I had a boss for... And this is probably pretty unheard of, but I had a boss on and off for about 10 years throughout my career. And while I was in kind of the thick of it and reporting to this individual, I didn't really realize that I was getting mentored or that they were a very great professional mentor. It was kind of this hindsight bias that I had as I'd been reflecting on it over the last couple of years. When I was working under this individual, I really leaned into a lot of different projects, different teams. How could I get more information? How could I get the most information that I wanted? And so I was always coming to this individual and saying, you know, I'm really interested in, let's say, what the innovations team is doing. How can I sit with them and like learn more about what they're doing or maybe work on a project with them? And somehow within the next couple of months, I was always able to work on a project with whatever team it was that I brought to this individual. And just that ability to expand my skill set, expand my mindset, and work with multiple people who maybe had a different idea of what learning and development was, or a different interpretation of how to display content, that was it was just invaluable. I mean, I got so much that 10 years, and I really credit it to how I perform today or how I think about learning and development today, and also how I develop people who maybe I'm mentoring or who I'm leading and try to give them those same opportunities and really inspire that hunger that I had throughout my early career too. I was always asking for different projects and being that sponge. So I just was so appreciative that I had a mentor, whether I knew it or not, I had a mentor that was helping me soak up that information and giving you those opportunities.
That's incredible. I mean, having a mentor who guides you for that long is just incredible. It's a good thing to have. And then it's interesting how when you, at the time, you don't notice it until you reflect back on it, right? That mentorship can be something you ask for. It can be something that just happens organically.
Right. That's true.
So learning from experienced professionals is key, but staying informed is just as important. So Haley, where do you turn for the latest L&D insights?
I would say I have probably like three that I really are like my go-tos. So when I have downtime, I'm looking at their sites or looking at their content and trying to figure out like how can I stay ahead of the curve? One of those is ATD. So I spoke for the OrgDev conference last year that they put on. And when I got there, I chatted with some of the organizers And I was just blown away at the sheer amount of prep work that they did. So everybody has to submit a proposal in order to speak at those events. But what we don't know is all the behind the scenes prior to those proposals being submitted, that they're looking at, okay, what do our attendees actually want to be learning about? There's some deep research happening year over year to understand and maybe project what attendees would want to learn about. And so I just love that ability to pull individuals who may be attending or maybe previous attenders. I just love that research angle that they're taking to make the conferences much more impactful for the people attending. I love that aspect. The other group that I find a lot of really great content with is the Chief Learning Officer group. And I just feel like they always have such relevant content. I feel like they are a great resource for that. And they're always trying to adapt their content to make sure it's relevant to the audience. So great examples. I think we've all seen this shift in the narrative around DE&I over the last several months. And they had planned on having a DE&I panel, I think it was last month in February. And because of a lot of the narrative that they saw, instead of having that kind of standard panel, they sent out an email to their community and they said, hey, we understand that there is a shift in how DE&I is being perceived right now. Let's have a frank and open conversation about that. And so they actually shifted how they were looking at that panel. And I think that just makes so much sense. And that just shows that adaptability piece, how we're able to shift and how we are thinking about content and really absorbing it. And I think the last one that I really use from a data perspective is a group called Lightcast. They do a lot of data analysis based on job descriptions that are out there and looking at the industry's skills. And I think this can be really important as we consider, again, the next 5 years, the next 10 years within the workforce and how we are approaching skills development and being a little bit more thoughtful about what skills do we have today versus tomorrow? What do we need for tomorrow? And they do such wonderful data analysis on skills development, the current skills of various industries. I just love what they're doing out there. So those will be my three, I think, that are my go-tos when I need some additional information.
Excellent. Those are fantastic resources. I wrote down Lighthouse because I haven't heard of that one, so I'm going to check that one out. So basically, you know, the learning never stops, right? And great leaders also learn from great books. So if someone is in leadership, what's the one book you recommend?
Oh, hands down. Every single time somebody asks me for a recommendation for a leadership book, it is a book by an author called Herminia Ibarra. And her book is called Act Like a Leader, Think Like a Leader. It is one that I go to time and time again. It is wonderful for beginning leaders, transitional leaders. It's actually a book that I used to teach a course last summer at Johns Hopkins about imposter syndrome, because we know that comes up when we're moving into leadership. And so I have leaned on this book so many times, my own leadership transition. And this was actually the book that I can remember very vividly. I was on a work trip and I was reading this book and the light bulb went off that this was the book that told me that I needed to go back to get my doctorate. It just has such a profound stamp on my thought process related to leadership. It really informed a lot of how I am today and how I show up too.
That's an excellent choice. I need to go back and reread that.
I love it.
Yes. I think it definitely... it's about stepping up, right? Thinking differently. And that book, you know, offers great insights around that. Well, thank you for sharing your expertise today. It's been a great conversation.
Absolutely.
Before we wrap up, I want to express my sincere thanks in a meaningful way. And as a token of our appreciation for being on the show, Training Pros will plant 5 trees in your name. Our charity initiative. We have a charity initiative that is focused on planting trees around the world. And to date, we've planted over 4,200 trees. So we'll be adding 5 more in your honor and sending you a certificate so you can see where they're growing at. And it's just a small way for us to say thank you for your time and the value you've shared with our listeners today.
Yes, that is so awesome. I love that gift. Thank you.
So with
so
that,
wonderful.
We wrap up this episode of Learning Leader Spotlight. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.